My name is Richard Hill. This is First Tuesday Rainy Day Radio. And now I'm very delighted to welcome to the show Nora Heafy from New Haven, Connecticut tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, Nora.
Thank you for having me.
Nora is a student organizer with the Sunrise Movement and Fossil Free Yale. And in the past couple of years, she has been involved in both electoral organizing and direct action. She also took part in the sit-in at Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office that launched the Green New Deal campaign that we're going to focus on tonight. Well, thank you so much again, Nora, for joining us tonight. What I'd like to start with, perhaps, is just for people that haven't heard about the Sunrise Movement and this inception of one of the most ambitious and inspiring notions to grip the country since, let's say, the discussion around Medicare for All. What is the Sunrise Movement? How did it start? What is its agenda? And now that you've sort of made your mark with your initial demonstration and outdooring of this legislation, what will your agenda be in the near future?
Yeah, absolutely. So Sunrise is building a movement led by young people to stop climate change and create millions of good-paying jobs in the process. And one of the things that's most exciting about it is that we're transforming our generation's anger and frustration at witnessing really a lifetime of political inaction on climate into a mass movement that can build the political consensus for real solutions like a Green New Deal. So Sunrise was founded a little over a year ago by young people from all across the youth climate movement, some of whom were leading international climate talks, some of whom were fighting for fossil fuel divestment on their campuses. And those young people came together because despite the real victories that those campaigns achieved, they never really seemed to be enough. The hurricanes were still getting bigger, fires sweeping through California, and our movement was not growing in proportion to the scale of the crisis. So we came together to build bridges between protest, youth organizing, and electoral politics to make a movement that is as big as the crisis that we're facing together and that can actually stop climate change.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you how you personally came in contact with this movement. Where were you in your life? Were you a high school student at that time? And how did it come to you and grab you?
Yeah, I was a senior in high school, and I was taking a class in environmental sustainability. I was reading a lot of books about it and sort of thinking about climate change in very abstract terms as something that we were working slowly but surely towards solving. And then about halfway through my senior year of high school, Trump was elected, and the wave of both protest and organizing, but also really reevaluating what our movements had accomplished, kind of swept me up and brought me into the youth climate movement. And that was just when Sunrise was getting started. And I hopped onto a welcome call, sort of like what was happening just an hour ago, and was so impressed by the depth of strategy that the movement was putting together. It felt like the first time I had really seen something that could win.
So what were those strategies, and how did it in fact spread in this network that was able to mobilize hundreds and probably thousands in future actions across the country? Where were you, by the way, in high school? Were you in Connecticut at the time?
Yeah, I grew up here in New Haven, and I have lived my whole life here.
Mm-hmm. Was this all social media, you know, the magical force that seems to get everything accomplished in our lives these days?
Yeah, a lot of our organizing is done remotely. Up until about a month ago, there was no Sunrise New Haven hub, and I did a lot of video calls and supporting actions remotely. So when Sunrise started, really I think what has helped it spread so fast is how compelling our message is to our generation. I think young people really feel that we've been failed by our political leaders on both parties who have made a lot of empty promises about their ability to stop climate change, but are really in the pockets of corporate polluters. And so Sunrise started with this No Fossil Fuel Money pledge, really pressuring our politicians to put their money where their mouth is and sign on, you know, you can't be a climate leader and also take hundreds of thousands of dollars from ExxonMobil. That's a really compelling message and sort of something that hasn't existed before. And then with the Green New Deal, it was really incredible to see a solution that was exactly what we needed and that integrates racial and economic justice and is not being scaled down by corporate polluters, by the policy process. Like, this is actually what we need. And I think that the clarity of that call to action combined with, you know, telling personal stories about how this is not just about polar bears, this is not just about graphs and charts, this is going to deeply affect my life and people that I care about, is what has made this so powerful.
I think it's remarkable and ingenious that this activism around climate change has connected so many of the strands of crisis in our country specifically, but globally, with income inequality, racial injustice, mass incarceration. All these issues seem to find a nexus in the Green New Deal. I'm wondering, how did that happen? Were there many minds at work sort of putting this together, or did a lot of this take shape after the demonstrations that took place in the halls of Congress?
Yeah, definitely there had been a large coalition of people from different sectors of the climate movement thinking about the kind of plan that we would need and how to get it to scale. From my perspective, everything sort of accelerated and exploded a little bit after the action at Nancy Pelosi's office. And, you know, part of that has been having people like Representative Ocasio-Cortez in the halls of Congress to actually put forward policy and resolutions is so powerful and something that I have not been lucky enough to see in my lifetime, and is also the result of all of the electoral organizing that we did over the summer. But looking back on that and recovering from the speed at which things seem to be happening in the winter, there's been a lot more coalitional organizing and reaching out to different people who are not necessarily the environmental movement, but who are doing really important racial and economic justice organizing and really have the solutions already. You know, the solutions are out there and they're in our communities. They're not in Exxon-funded policy proposals.
Well, I just had a group of young students here, actually two high school students from Bridgeport, Connecticut, and one of them said, I asked him, do you think that this Green New Deal proposal will take hold in the urban youth communities the way maybe the March for Our Lives, the gun violence issue did? And he said bluntly, no, I don't think it will. He said, I don't think people are going to be able to connect the dots. Young people are going to understand that this issue of renewable energy and redoing our energy production grid and all that kind of stuff is going to really hit the target with young urban youth. How might the movement proceed to be able to engage students in cities, students who are facing so many challenges with lousy schools, with just making sure that there's food on the table, their parents working two or three jobs? Is there a sense of how you might connect with that demographic?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question and one that our movement's answer to is always growing and developing, you know, from talking to people who have felt alienated by the environmental movement for a lot of their lives. And I think really the key to it is articulating that many of these problems that we're facing as young people, as working class people, are all related and not just necessarily related in the sense that climate change will make them worse, but related in that big corporations, polluters, Wall Street, and corrupt billionaires who are in the pockets of the fossil fuel industry have been prioritizing their own riches over people's lives. And that's really, you know, at the heart of the issue. And so I think building a movement that really reckons with that and that is not purely focused on electing politicians, but also at creating a huge grassroots movement to hold those people accountable and is not afraid to challenge them when they really fail to live up to our expectations is going to be really important. And I also think recognizing that just because climate change is the largest and maybe foremost challenge of our generation, and it's something that weighs very heavily on my mind, it's definitely not the only problem that young people are facing, or necessarily the one that they should devote all of their energy to. And so it's not enough to pass a policy that is only aimed at stopping greenhouse gas emissions. We actually have to tackle this thing systemically.
We're speaking with Nora Heafy. She's a student organizer with the Sunrise Movement and Fossil Free Yale. She's a sophomore at Yale College. And Nora, I would like you to maybe offer your assessment on the tenor of the discussion and the activity that's taken place around the Green New Deal since the November demonstrations in the halls of Congress, and since the initial furor and just like burst of energy, as you mentioned, from Representative Ocasio-Cortez and several other progressives around this. How do you think this discussion and activism and potentially concrete legislative action is proceeding?
Yeah, I think it's really the most exciting political and climate action development that has happened in my lifetime. This is really a huge, realistic, but like bold plan to address climate change. As you may know, right after the action at Nancy Pelosi's office in November, Representative Ocasio-Cortez proposed a select committee on a Green New Deal that would lay out a framework for how we're going to basically cut our emissions to zero by 2030 and do this in a way that prioritizes communities that have been sidelined and also, you know, builds up infrastructure. And eventually that committee was pushed to the side in favor of a weaker version that doesn't have the same kind of power. I think that's definitely a sign that establishment Democrats are not where they need to be to really address climate change. And so that makes it our job as a movement of grassroots people in their communities with congressional representatives to really push them on that and be constantly demanding that they stand up for our generation's future and for the health and well-being of all people. But it's definitely not the end of the line. What was just announced an hour ago on the live stream is that Representative Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Markey are going to be introducing very soon resolutions into the House and Senate this week, actually, for a Green New Deal. And these resolutions, you know, hundreds of them are introduced, and they really live and die by how much support they get in the first couple weeks. So what's coming next for the movement is that we take all of the energy that we've been gathering. You know, we've basically multiplied the number of hubs by 5 in the past months, which is crazy. And we really put it into getting all of our representatives to back this plan, you know, showing up at their offices, calling them and tweeting them. And that's something that those are skills that we've been developing. So we're ready.
Well, I'm just wondering, the Green New Deal has so many moving parts to it. I know it's still being hammered out and details are some of the details will be the last things to fall into place. But I'm just wondering, given that this proposal, if it all came together with the notion of income inequality, racial justice, mass incarceration, solving so many problems, that given that it would require a radical restructuring of the U.S. economy, how optimistic are you that this kind of really overarching legislation will come out of the initial discussion and activity that you've been engaged in?
Yeah, I would say that I'm very optimistic about it, perhaps unrealistically so. But I think that there's really no way to do this kind of work on the climate crisis without holding a lot of hope that we as a society can move past where we are right now. It's sort of generally very difficult and heartbreaking organizing to work in. And I think that this particular political moment has been building for a long time that, you know, it's sort of similar to what we've been seeing with the March for Our Lives organizing, but a lot of intentional thought and strategy has gone into getting us here, a lot of lessons from movements of generations past. And really, you know, we don't have a choice. Like, we have to win. We have to have a society that is just and a planet to live on when I'm an adult and for my children. And so I think that we have a bold and compelling vision for how to make that happen, and a lot of people are ready to do it.
Well, it's interesting, and I think just sort of mind-boggling, that high school students and college students have been in the vanguard, not just of the climate movement, but of social change and really consciousness raising that has reverberated up the pipeline to their adult parents, their teachers, and now even into the corridors of power. You know, you have the Parkland students, their organizing led to this unbelievable demonstration, series of demonstrations, where millions of people around the country were involved in a day of action. The Oregon high school students who are suing the federal government for inaction on climate change, and somebody like Greta Thunberg, the Swedish 15-year-old who addressed the UN plenary session at the Poland climate discussions last December. I'm just wondering, how do you explain that the energy is all coming from students that have basically been ignored, utterly overlooked in any kind of conversations around the direction of that our country and society should be going, and suddenly they are now leading? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've pretty much hit on it. Like, the issue is that young people have grown up knowing that the stable climate that human civilization has depended on for millennia could crumble within our lifetimes. And we've seen our political leaders continue to fail us, often laughing at us or calling us young and naive. And that's deeply, deeply discouraging. And so movements like Sunrise are filling a cultural gap for young people. They're enabling us to join together in spaces that trust and uplift our leadership and reckon with the fact that every single one of us will see the devastating effects of climate change in our lifetime, and we've inherited a crisis that we did not create. And yet we're taking responsibility and rising up to address it.
And once again, we're speaking with Nora Heafy. She's a student organizer with Sunrise Movement and Fossil Free Yale. Nora, perhaps you could give us some insight as to what kind of activism on these issues is happening on the campus at Yale, and perhaps if it's spilling over into the New Haven community.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we've been working on as part of Fossil Free Yale is a massive campaign calling on the university to divest its holdings from fossil fuels and direct its fund managers to cancel their holdings in Puerto Rico's debt. And we see these two things as very deeply related, both to each other and to Sunrise's mission. Yale is invested in corporations like ExxonMobil that are causing the climate crisis and bribing our politicians to prevent climate action, but they're also invested in hedge funds like Baupost that are exploiting the people of Puerto Rico who are first affected by the impacts of climate change. And last semester, we saw an incredible coalition of over 20 student organizations, New Haven organizations, Connecticut and Puerto Rico groups come together to pull off the largest ever university direct action for fossil fuel divestment. 48 students and community members and professors were arrested at the Yale Investments office demanding divestment and cancellation of Puerto Rico's debt. And so that's been an incredibly exciting moment to be a part of. And I think it's just representative of the same type of energy that is propelling the Green New Deal at a national level.
What kind of feedback or reaction have you had from the Yale administration on this issue? Are you in negotiations with them? And what might we expect going forward there?
We've had basically silence from them. Yale decided not to divest in 2013 after extensive negotiations and a policy proposal. They gave barely a cursory examination to the issue of Puerto Rico's debt. So really, our administrative channels have failed us, which is, you know, the same thing that we're seeing with the federal government, with many of our establishment politicians. And so what's coming next is continued escalated direct action until Yale is forced to respond. We're going to be bringing a national spotlight on our university. We're going to be calling out the fact that Yale's investments are inconsistent with our values as a university. We claim to be, you know, in support of climate action and also of marginalized and oppressed people. And so that is going to, I think, be one of the most exciting things locally about this semester.
And as we come down the stretch here, I just want to ask you a little bit more about your organizing network and strategies. And obviously, you've had success, obviously, in bringing together, as you said, activists from the Latino community around this recent action at the Yale administration around divestment. But can you talk a little bit more about this? Because I think this is critical just for us as activists ourselves to know how you have succeeded so far in communicating through the youth networks and maybe actually breaking barriers and speaking with Black and Latino activists and forming coalitions with them to date. But I'd like to know a little bit more about your strategies for mobilizing, educating, and organizing high school students and also reaching Black and Latino activists.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has come from really recognizing that we are not, in most cases, needing to teach or like bring in these groups into our movement. They actually have a lot of knowledge and experience organizing around these areas and have a lot of the wisdom and solutions that we need. So some of the things that we've been thinking a lot about are, you know, with Sunrise, making sure that groups like Climate Justice Alliance, like the Indigenous Environmental Network, are really centered in discussions and are also always, always present at the table. And more locally, really making sure that we're creating a movement space where anyone can be a leader from day one, where there's no hierarchy or check boxes that you have to fill in order to lead and participate and have your ideas be heard and honored. And that's been really important. And I think for high schoolers specifically, I think it can be really powerful to have someone talk to you as a high schooler, like you know what's up with climate change, have something to contribute, don't need to be like taught from a textbook. This is your lived reality. And that's really empowering.
How many chapters, if that's the correct nomenclature, are there of the Sunrise Movement nationally?
I believe at this point there are around 130 hubs nationally.
By hubs, you mean in different cities?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You mentioned you just had a networking call or something where anybody could sign in and participate in the conversation. Is that what happened this last day or so?
Yeah, there was more of a live stream of our strategy that I think about 2,000 people attended.
Amazing. And how often does that happen? And how can people stay in that process?
That was sort of a large strategy update. We have more regular Sunrise 101 calls for folks who want to take on leadership in the movement. Really, the best way to get involved is to go to sunrisemovement.com and check out the work that is being done and sign up for email updates. There's going to be a ton of opportunities to take action in the next couple of weeks.
Would you like to enlighten us on any of those, or is that under wraps?
Yeah, for sure. I think that a lot of it will be much clearer when we actually have the text of the policy proposal, which should be out Thursday, tentatively. But basically, what we'll be doing this coming week is making our demand really clear. So tweeting and calling and emailing our senators and representatives relentlessly with our demand that they back this joint resolution for a Green New Deal, and then showing up in person at their offices and asking them to co-sponsor it, really keeping the pressure high to show that there's a lot of grassroots support. And then we're really giving our leaders a deadline of 3 weeks to read the resolution and make their decision. And then those who have not signed on yet, we will unite for a nationwide day of action, storming into their offices, taking them over, and making it clear that we are ready to hold our politicians' feet to the fire.
That sounds like a plan, I should say. And I just want to mention, to ask you to clarify, are you referring in this resolution to the work that's being done by Senator Ed Markey and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on this Green New Deal proposal? Is that the resolution that you're talking about? Okay, yes, and we're seeing press releases on that. You're saying that we can expect to see a draft of that in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, that should be released actually in the next couple of days.
Nora Heafy, student organizer at Yale with Fossil Free Yale and the Sunrise Movement, thank you very much for joining us tonight and for sharing a lot of wisdom and great information.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.